Isle Monty is up next with something written by myself and Lulu called Trekatrice Challenge.
This is my first attempt at fanfiction. Please rate and review or I'll find out where you live and crush you! Just kidding! Hee hee! Smiley face. Seriously, rate and review though. I know there have to be more people that listen to Acton that want this pairing besides just me! The story starts out normally enough, but...
Read all the way to the end for the surprise twist!
Okay, enjoy! Trekatrice Challenge by... Oh my god, a new extra fan! And Lulu.
I just can't do it. It's too hard,
Trekatrice said sadly as she sat at her desk. She'd been staring at the clock over the blackboard for what felt like days. It was really only a few minutes, but to Trekatrice it felt like days because Trekatrice got hit on the head at a young age and now doesn't tell time so good. She cringed rapidly as she eyed the blackboard again. There was a math problem about women, and she could not figure it out. Was it woman or women? The numbers were all lost upon her. Her dusky eyes squinted at the blackboard again, hoping to make some sense of this. 5 chimpanzee. 4 chimpanzee. She began to count backwards. Her therapist told her that doing that was a good way to relieve stress. But she could not remember what came after 4. She was also kicked in the head by a donkey at a young age, and now also can't count very good as well. But it was all futile. She couldn't get her mind to concentrate on anything except one thing. That thing was a boy. A boy named Russ. Russ was the star of the track team, and only the coolest boy in the whole entire Acton High. The girls went crazy over his lean, ripped built, his striking cobalt eyes, and his handsome beard. But Trekatrice knew better. She knew deep down he just wanted a real friend. And she was that friend. Her theory was confirmed when earlier that day he actually came up to talk to her, much to her surprise.
What up, Trekatrice? He had said in his rich, buttery voice that reminded her of warm molasses on a cold autumn day. He leaned nonchalantly on the lockers.
Hi, Russ! Not much,
she managed to squeak. Her heart began to beat quickly, like a hamster's heart.
Say, I had a question for you.
Could this be it? In her heart of hearts, Trekatrice knew he was going to ask her to the full dance. She tried to play cool, but all she could do was stare at his beard as he spoke. It was like an enchanted forest that she could become lost in.
Sure, what's up?
Well, I was hoping that you might help me study for the history test tomorrow. I know you know a lot about medieval torture devices, and I just haven't had the time to study. I've been pretty busy running track and also being the finalist on Sing It, and always coming in top 5 on Acton every week.
Trekatrice was shocked. Surely she must have heard wrong. But no, she was not deaf after all. So she exclaimed,
"You're so amazing, Russ. Sure, I'll help you study."
Russ smiled, a little shyly.
"That's a relief. Thanks a lot, Treg. Not a lot of people see past my beard and rippling calf muscles to the real me. But you do. I like you, Treg."
You do?
She asked, stuttering slightly. Trekatrice was so excited as she lost herself in his emerald eyes. She thought she might soil herself right then and there. Russ got up close to whisper in her ear,
"Your potential excites me."
Trekatrice was frozen in wonderment as Russ strode gracefully away, calling over his shoulder,
"I'll pick you up at 7. Oh, and don't make any plans for the fall dance, baby."
Trekatrice waited until he had turned a corner. In the hallway of the school, there are 4 sets of lockers and then the corner that people turn that leads to the gym. After he was out of sight, Trekatrice did a little twirl. She could already think of so much they had in common. They both had insomnia. They were both at least half Jewish. Both of them liked apples. At least she assumed they did. Who doesn't like apples? Not her or Russ, that's who. This was going to be perfect. She would be like Princess Tiana, only not black. Suddenly, her smile shrunk and withered away like a monkey's paw. What would she wear? Never mind the dance. What would she wear when Russ arrived to pick her up? Ring! Ring! The bell caused her to snap out of her remembering. It was time to leave school and finally close to 7 o'clock. When she got home, she searched the back of her closet for something to wear. She finally decided on her outfit and got ready. And then thought twice and got rid of the bra. Then stood in front of the AC for a while. There. That's better. The doorbell went ding dong. And Tregarty was so surprised she fell. She quickly got up and ran to the door. Nervously, she opened it to reveal Russ's ruggedly handsome visage.
Russ! Tregarty bubbled. I'm so glad you're here. Are you ready to come hardcore on medieval history?
Oh, yes, Treg, said Russ soothingly. But he looked troubled. Tregarty hated to see the man she liked in such pain. Then he said,
Tregarty, I can't go on like this. I have to tell you something, a secret, a deep, dark one. Even you wouldn't like it.
Tregarty's heart wept. Oh, anything her Russ had to say to her couldn't ever be bad enough for her to stop liking him. Nothing could ever make me stop liking you, Russ.
But that's just it,
Russ shouted.
I'm not Russ. I'm actually...
And suddenly, Russ peeled off his face like a mask and revealed... the face of Sonic Mega.
What?
Cried Tregarty.
I've been trying to win your affection by joining the track team. I even pretended to be Jewish and gave up my furry pastimes. Please, I love you, Tregarty. I love you.
Sonic Mega got down on his knees and asked,
Tregarty, will you marry me?
Tregarty was so disappointed. She wanted to marry Russ. Sonic Mega didn't even have a beard. But she was desperate and really wanted to get some action, so she shrugged and said,
Yeah, okay.
And they lived happily ever after.
Oh, Monty.
Oh, Dylan, I've got a couple of issues with this.
Oh, really?
Number one, I was actually dropped on my head as a child.
Well, I didn't know that at the time, so there.
Yeah, it wasn't really dropped on my head. It was turned upside down while my mother shook cherry tomatoes out of my throat so I would stop gagging. Yes. But anyway, and I can tell the difference between woman and woman. You can't hear the difference between woman and woman doesn't mean that I can't tell the difference. So, whatever, homie, whatever.
Okay, that makes perfect sense, Tregarty.
Also, Monty, you said emerald eyes instead of gaze, and you said, are you ready to come hardcore on some medieval history? I'm pretty sure you said, are you ready to come hardcore on some medieval
instead
history?
Instead of for some hardcore medieval history. The line was, are you ready for some hardcore medieval history? She's changed to, are you ready to come hardcore medieval history? You did gaze for eyes, closer, you changed to close. You skipped everywhere he went before the girls went crazy. You basically flubbed a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, you have immunity tonight. I don't know. if you didn't, I don't know. You flubbed so many lines in this that I don't know that you would go through.
Yeah.
But... your Tregarty voice is pretty legit.
Well, I mean, it sounded a lot prettier than my voice.
I like that you had Tregarty stumble between 5 and 4 chimpanzee because she couldn't count. And I liked how animated you were in the author's notes. I liked all of your impressions. I liked your Tregarty impression a lot. And a lot of
your Russ impression amused me because it sounded more like Hmong.
Oh, Hmong.
I love you, Hmong.
A lot of the readings that you did that were funny, like that where Tregarty stumbled on between 5 and 4 and a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. Like Sonic Mega!
I really liked your Sonic Mega when, like, you actually sounded heartfelt and like, you really did love me. So I like that.
And I know that's a very difficult thing to portray, is loving Tregarty.
I know. I give you props for that. Not even my friends love me.
I loved your performance. I just had a problem with all the flubs you made on the lines. It's probably lucky you have immunity this week.
Oh, and another thing, Dylan. You said that I was going to be like Princess Tiana, except not black.
I know you are black.
No, that's not the thing I have a problem with.
Okay.
The thing I have a problem with is that Princess Tiana was an extraordinarily hard worker, and I'm a lazy asshole.
That's true.
Just had to put that out there.
You're missing the point of the extremely well-written story, though. That didn't even do with it.
Just because you had a part in writing it.
So, about Monty.
I liked your read overall.
I think it's lucky you have immunity.
Yeah, well...
I liked your read, but I think you're lucky to have immunity.
Yeah.
Although Sam... Well, we'll talk about this later. All right. Oh, I liked that you put Let's Get It On in the song, and you used the back track instead of the vocals.
Yes.
I liked all your music choices. Majin Buu was up next with the sequel to The Fifth Element.
The Will by Mr. Wallace. Disclaim. I do not own The Fifth Element, but I wish I did. This story takes place right after the movie ends.
Mr. President, let me introduce you to Professor Mattenberg, who runs the center, said Monroe.
It's an honor to receive you, Mr. President, replied Mattenberg.
Yes. Well, where are our two heroes? Beamed the president.
They were so tired from the ordeal that we put them in the reactor this morning, said Mattenberg.
I have 19 more meetings after this one, the president replied immediately.
Of course. Let me see if they're revived, replied Mattenberg.
We go live in 1 minute, Mr. President, said a cameraman.
Mattenberg goes to the reactor and opens a small slot, which allows him to see what's going on under the blue shield. Milu and Corbin are naked, arms wrapped around each other, kissing.
They need 5 more minutes, said Mattenberg, embarrassed. Damn it, I don't have time! Wake them up! Yelled the president.
Without looking into the reactor, Mattenberg pressed a red button and spoke into the microphone.
Excuse me, but the president wishes to have a brief interview.
Lilu and Corbin were confused, but managed to get dressed in time to when the reactor door opened. When they got out of the reactor, they were sworn by reporters, but were held back by the police.
We're on in 10 seconds, the cameraman yelled.
So Lilu and Corbin stood next to the president, looking at the camera.
Action! The cameraman yelled and started filming. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present Corbin Dallas and Lilu, who with great strength and courage carried out the task of stopping a meteor which could have obliterated the Earth. And so, I award Major Corbin Dallas, who has served in our distinguished army, the Congressional Medal of Honor for bravery and fortitude in the face of his enemies.
The president said and reached for a small mahogany box from which he pulled out the medal and placed the medal around Corbin's neck. Corbin was absolutely speechless. He suddenly remembered that he was fighting an army mission, even though his enlistment ended years ago.
Well, I'm speechless, Corbin chuckled.
Lilu smiled. I'm very honored for this medal, but I know I wouldn't be here today without the help of Father Cornelius. And of course, Lilu, Corbin said and smiled at Lilu.
And for you, my lady, we give you the Golden Cross, the highest honor a citizen can achieve. The president said, putting a golden necklace with a golden cross around her neck.
Lilu gave a big smile and said,
Thank you.
Until then, I bid you all farewell, said the president. Cut, the cameraman said.
Corbin and Lilu walked hand in hand to a speeder, compliments of the government.
Excuse me, Corbin Dallas, said a voice from behind them.
Corbin and Lilu turned around to see a man in a black suit.
Yes, I'm Corbin Dallas.
I was instructed to give this to you, said the man and handed him a letter and left.
What does it say, Corbin?
Lilu said. Corbin opened up the letter and read that his very rich uncle, Hubert Drafner, was dead.
My uncle is dead, Corbin said, shocked.
Lilu gave him a hug and said,
Were you very close?
Kind of. He owned a huge casino and hotel ship, just like the Flushed in Paradise.
Corbin read on to read that his uncle left every single thing he owned to Corbin, in his will. Corbin nearly died on the spot.
What? What is it?
Lilu said, confused.
He left everything he owned to me, Corbin said in awe.
Lilu smiled, kissed him, and said,
You're rich!
Yeah, not only that, but he owns mansions all over the galaxy, Corbin explained. It says that I have to go to the courthouse and sign the papers, and everything's mine.
Why don't you go do that? Why don't you go get some new clothes?
Lilu said excitedly.
Okay, I'll be home in about 3 hours, he said and kissed Lilu goodbye.
Chapter 2. Corbin entered a giant courthouse and found his way to a clerk who helped him out.
Sign here, 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 and here, and put the date here, she said. In the event of your death, write here who you want to inherit this, she told Corbin.
Corbin thought a second, and then put Lulu's name.
All right then, thank you,
she said, uploading the document in the computer. After he left the courthouse, he went to a jewelry shop across the street. He walked in to be greeted by a burly man with small glasses.
Ah! You're the bloke I saw on TV! Welcome to my store! Can I assist you then?
Yes, can I see your wedding rings? Corbin asked.
Right here in the glass case! The owner pointed.
For about an hour, Corbin pondered and pondered over what kind of ring to get. But finally, he bought a ring with a medium-sized diamond in the center with small rubies lining in the band. The man thanked Corbin, polished the ring, put it in a velvet box and tied a blue bow on top. Corbin got into his speeder and headed home. Lulu entered the gigantic mall, and being somewhat illiterate, just browsed until she saw what she liked, particularly a beautiful red dress in a fancy dress tailor shop. Lulu told the woman what she wanted, and the woman made the measurements and quickly produced the same beautiful dress as in the window, but Lulu's size. When Lulu paid for the dress, she laid a golden necklace she found on Paradise someone dropped in the confusion on the counter and left. The woman was speechless. The necklace was probably worth about twice as much as her dress. Other than that, she just bought a few more sets of clothing, being careful not to dress in front of everyone, and took a cab home. When Lulu arrived at Corbin's apartment, she laughed to find Corbin answering dozens of phone calls from his uncle's lawyers and a call from Ruby Road.
Oh, Lulu, I'm glad you're back, he said, hanging up the phone and kissing her.
I'm tired, Corbin. Can I go to sleep?
She asked. Corbin smiled, hiding the small box.
Sure. I'll be along in a while.
Then the phone rang.
Hello? Corbin said.
Hello, Corbin. How are you? Said Cornelius.
I'm fine. And you? Corbin asked.
Fine. I wanted to tell you something about Lulu, he said with a hint of sorrow in his tone.
Yes, what? Corbin asked in anticipation.
Well, I've no doubt you are planning to marry Lulu, but I'm afraid that Lulu is unable to produce children.
I'm sorry, Corbin said sadly. Corbin felt like punching Cornelius and crying at the same time.
Why? Lulu was made to protect, not produce offspring. I'm so surprised you were able to introduce love to her. I'm so sorry. Goodbye,
Cornelius said and hung up.
I love the disclaimer, Chagachi.
The disclaimer?
The guy
wrote. Oh, yeah. Funny. Disclaim.
Okay. So there were some problems here.
Number one, it sounded like you were saying Mattenberg when you were supposed to say Machtelberg.
There's more problems than that.
I know. I'm just going to start with you said things wrong. And then you said into the microphone instead of into a microphone. And you
immediately
said...
Immediately it was written as impatiently.
And you said Hubert instead of Herbert. And you said clothings instead of clothes. And Corbin instead of Cornelius, which actually
started
is a really big one.
To start filming. Yeah, that one's that's the unforgivable one.
Yeah.
First of all, you need to be really careful to enunciate. A lot of your words just sounded slurred, and especially as a narrator, you need to be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chuck, as you said, to top this off, you said when Cornelius told Corbin he was unable to produce children, you read that as Corbin saying it, which that's like an almost unforgivable error.
Yeah, that's completely ruining the world that the author wrote, like completely, without a doubt.
And also, your Lulu voice was ridiculous, and it wouldn't fly if you were narrating this for a book or on CD or whatever.
Yeah, like, I've heard some professional authors, when they're narrating books, they'll talk like this and something, except the male version, and so they'll slightly heighten their voice. I'm sure Dylan could do it, but...
I talk like that normally, apparently. You sound a lot like Nation Maker in this to me.
Yeah.
You had like a Nation Maker vibe going. I think Sam Haft now has some competition for bottom of the barrel tonight.
Unfortunately.
I know, because I really like you.
Yeah.
I like Sam, too. But do you have anything else you want to say about this?
Not really.
I'm super bummed.
Yeah.
All right.